Giannotto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No one!
Well, here we go with the Brock and Salk podcast. Spring training, pitchers and catchers underway, but not the story. Not the story.
Are the birds still chirping underneath the awning there?
They might be.
Are the cleats clanking?
They might be.
Do you think they got that same little rack from like Costco that everybody puts their cleats on before they walk in?
Hope so.
Can't you just close your eyes, boys, and picture Kyle trying to set up our table every morning, Salk putting his sunglasses on as the sun's shining, and he's like, I can't see anything on my computer. Oh, there they are.
I love them. Oh, there. Yeah, that's a good sound. Sound of the cleats.
Brock cleats on pavement.
Brock admiring everyone's body type. And
Brock trying to get Kyle Seager to speak to him.
I was going to say, Kyle Seager giving Brock the silent treatment. Remember when they sort of buried the hatchet, but it didn't work?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They tried to bury the hatchet, but it just didn't take.
Well, it was Seager's... over the children. It was for the children. It was with Titus and Macy there. Kyle and Macy were juggling soccer balls. A bond was built.
To be fair, the guy's
brief. Anyway,
and then Seager's wife, you know, kind of stirred it back up, so it was problematic.
Well, everything, you know, that's not the story. I wish it was. I wish that's what we were talking about, but what a complete and utter mess this week has been. And where do we start? Okay. The Mariners did the right. Let's start with this.
We start with facts. That's what we do.
Well, let's start with an opinion. The Mariners did the right thing. They had to do this, right? I don't see how Kevin Mather left them any choice but to make the move they did. And you know, I had been kind of working my way into that opinion, but it was interesting talking to, I think it was Jake and Stacy on Monday. And, you know, one of the things Jake brought up was this idea of, and I've seen other people bring it up as well, which is that, you know, when Mather gave his written apology on Sunday night, it said that his words didn't represent the views of the Mariners. And, you know, to my thought, like that kind of apology will often hold some water when you're not talking about your business, right? If the, you know, if a CEO of a company makes a comment about the government or about politics, or you can say, okay, well, that doesn't reasonably represent the view of the company. That's just that person's opinion.
And you see that, by the way, in social media platforms.
That's right.
You see a lot of executives.
Yes.
You see a lot of talent. You see a lot of people say, hey, you know, these views that I'm expressing here do not represent my company. You know, these are my personal views. There's outlets and there's at times platforms for that.
And even that is iffy, whether or not that's. Except, I mean, that people still, right. I mean, like, you can make that argument. It may not hold
comments
water.
Comments do not reflect my employer.
But fine. If the CEO of United Airlines is talking about the airline industry, then it can reasonably be construed to be the opinion and view of United Airlines. And I think that's the problem you have here. The only way to separate the words of the CEO from the view of the company, in this case, the team, is to separate the CEO from the company. And that's exactly what they had to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it was a real challenging resignation. I would hope not. I mean, Kevin Mather, we know him. He is a smart enough guy, capable enough guy, pretty relational guy, too. I think Kevin Mather knew that this was the only way this is going to work. I would imagine when John Stanton had to have that conversation and the statement was put out, this is just, again, a bit of speculation, largely my opinion, but I think when that conversation between John and Kevin and whoever else was involved or not involved, I think it was I've got to resign. I mean, I made my bed and I've got to lay in it here and I will resign. And this is a step forward that the organization has to make and take.
Yeah, I've seen some comments that the Mariners should have taken the step to fire him. And I know Ryan Divish asked that question at the press conference and said, you know, would you have done that? Stanton's answer essentially was, I didn't have to make that choice.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they needed to. Ultimately, what they needed to do was separate themselves in whatever was the best way possible. And, you know, I don't see how they could have continued with Kevin Mather as their president and CEO. Just, you know, the word that I'll keep coming back to quite a bit today is trust. And I don't know how you build trust, whether it's with current players, future players, fans, the league, the union, the community. I mean, he violated the trust of so many people, and to do it at the Rotary Club breakfast.
Hey, that's a big one. Okay, Damon spoke at that a couple of years ago.
Oh, Damon did.
Oh,
yeah, he did.
Oh, hold
yeah.
on.
Wow. Well, they couldn't afford your speaking fee or what?
Why Larry Stone. Hey, Larry Stone spoke out in 2018. Okay, so just be careful.
Well, they've had some big names then.
No, we have not been able to get to a number that was agreeable. So, no, I have not done that yet. But, yes.
To tread on all of that trust. And Brock, I've used that word so many times to describe team ownership, right? You hold a team in the public trust. In the best interest of the community. My feeling about owners has always been this. We've said this a million times. If you own a team, my sincere hope is that you own it in lieu of the community getting a chance to own it. The community doesn't have $1 billion. You do. You get to own the team. You have to steward it on behalf of the public. If you are in sports ownership strictly to make money, I don't understand why you're in sports ownership.
Because they can make a lot of money.
But they've already made a lot of money.
Yeah, but you know how that works.
No, I don't. I really don't. Honestly.
Okay, well,
honestly.
It's called greed. It's called human greed.
But if you're in that, if you have that amount of money, Brock, you can make so much money in so many ways. Do it through private, you know, private equity or venture capital or, you know, the stock. There's so many ways to make money when you have $1 billion. Sports ownership needs to be something that is done in the public trust, in the public interest. And the problem with trying to make money off of sports, if you already have a lot of money and you do it the wrong way, is that you become an enemy of the people.
Yep.
People turn on you. And if you have that much money, what is the possible value to becoming an enemy of the public? I would never understand that.
And well, so see also in Seattle, Howard Schultz.
That's right.
So to exactly those points, you own a team for your ego. You get to that position of power because you want more control. Then you want to be in this club where there's only 30 in Major League Baseball and 32 in NFL. And it's, so you kind of hit on all the human fleshly, like desires and vices of greed.
Yeah. But if you're
and
the
control,
but if you're
and
the
ego
bad
and
owner,
power.
If you're the bad owner, they don't really want, like, it's not like you get invited to all the cool club, you know, benefits, right? You're the lousy owner. You're the one dragging down the league and making it look bad. I'm not saying that's the Mariners. In fact, I don't think it is. But, the A's or, you know, some of these organizations over time, right? I mean, Donald Sterling was another one who just ended up embarrassed. It didn't help him. It ended up embarrassing him. So my view and really the point I'm trying to make is just that you own teams and manage teams in the public trust, in the public interest. And so to violate that trust and to do it at a Rotary Club breakfast, I truly, it's mind blowing to me. And when you start going down the list of people that have a reasonable case to, I mean, I was asked by someone in the office yesterday, hey, who do you think was offended the most? Like, yes. The answer is yes. Everyone.
Well, I think honestly, my answer is John Stanton. Because you're in that position and you're a reflection of everything that you just said. That to me, that's obviously, it was personal to Kyle Seager. It was personal and professional to Jared Kelenic. It was personal, very personal to Julio Rodriguez and Iwakuma. But you violated the trust of your owner. I think John Stanton, Mike, to your point, is a guy that would say, we nodding along with you in every way. Yeah, this is why I bought the club. I was a minority owner, and I want to win it. I want to win it for my mom. I want to win it for Bellevue. I want to win it for Seattle. I want to win it for the Puget Sound. I want to win it for every Mariner fan that's languished like I have at all of these games and my mom has for all of these years. And I love baseball, and my sons have played baseball, and my kids are involved.
Season ticket holder.
Yes. Yeah, and I go watch Little League. Like, he's nodding with you, Mike, at every like turn of everything that you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what I want to be. I want to gain the civic trust. I'm not doing this just to make a buck. I've made my hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, in the wireless bet that I made years and years and years ago. And now I want to win a championship in the worst way. I want my legacy in this community and for my family to be that John Stanton was the one that turned this, that brought a World Series in a sport that he loves as much as anything. I think he was absolutely and needed to be included on that list of people that were hurt. Come on, man. This is our business. This is You're airing secrets that can't be aired in this forum. You're talking about players and our players that need to feel, and I know we're management and I know they're players, but we've got to engender belief. We've got to engender trust. And you broke that.
Mm-hmm.
And you broke that. And it's why I don't think that resignation was hard to get from Mr. Mather and why he won't be a part of this thing, obviously, moving forward.
I'll tell you, there were a lot of things in there that bothered me personally, Brock. And I think you're right about Stanton. I would agree with all that. I was upset about the way he talked about both Iwakuma and Rodriguez. I thought that there was an insensitivity there, an unwillingness to try to look at the world through somebody else's position, through someone else's eyes. I thought that was in really poor taste. And the Kelnick stuff, you know, revealing your secrets and how you do business, I thought was problematic. You know, I'll get to the one that really bothered me because I haven't heard anyone really mention it, but
you're just halfway through the lunch.
I know. I honestly, like, it really goes on for a while.
The Everett Stadium.
It wasn't the Everett Stadium.
Marco's boring. No. James Paxton will come begging
that
with
one,
his hat turned
that
over.
One was really tough because that's going to really, you know, be troubling for you in free agency down the road. Now, I'm going to read you one
none of those.
No, it's none of those. There's two words here that really bother me. I worry about the neighborhood. You know, we have employees that show up at 4:15 and leave at 10 o'clock at night, and there's not enough parking. So I can get away with charging $30, $40, $50 to park in my tiny little parking garage across the street.
Get away with?
So I don't let my employees park there. I know a lot of people have focused on whether or not the employees park there, and he has them park on the other side. How about this? Even this little thing bothered me. I have them park down on the other side of CenturyLink. I'll call it CenturyLink. You just went through a change in the name of your own stadium from Safeco to T-Mobile. Where's the respect for the team next to you changing the name of their field?
Oh.
I that boggles my mind. Why would, well, I'll just call it Safeco. what do you mean? The president of the Mariners, somebody who put together the kind of deal they did with T-Mobile, which is an amazing deal. You're telling me you're just fine with people? Yeah, but we'll just call it Safeco.
Meh.
I mean, that to me is truly problematic, but I can get away with charging $30, $40, $50 to park in my tiny little parking garage across the street.
Pulling one over on people seemed to be a theme of that conversation.
The idea of getting away with charging your fans more is, and maybe that's not how we meant it. I get that it's business, but when you're in this kind of a business, to say that out loud to fans who have stuck with you through 20 years of not making the playoffs, those are the people who are coming to the games.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people you are getting away with charging $30, $40, $50 to. I read that, Brock, and my mouth dropped. Honestly. To say that in public, look, I understand that may be the way, you know, all companies talk in their boardrooms and what they, you know, how far they can push it, supply and demand. I'm sure that's really all that's going on here.
And
I understand
the
business
29
element.
The 29 other presidents.
Of course.
In baseball as they talk and they communicate and they're trying to fill the kitty back up after a lost year and what have you.
I can get away
with
charging $30, $40, $50 to me is indicative of the problem. And so to move on was absolutely not just the right thing. It was the only thing. It was the only way, as I said earlier, to separate the words of the CEO from the view of the team was to separate him from the team. So, okay, fine. How did John Stanton do in his press conference? I don't think he's going to win any PR awards, but here's the thing. Words don't matter. What's really going to matter are the actions and the steps that the Mariners take. Now, what does John Stanton do about this? Who does he hire? I'm not going to keep beating a dead horse for the rest of this show today because we all know that we turn on any station in the city and you can find out all the reasons why the Mariners had to move on from Kevin Mather. So I won't keep beating the dead horse. This is an opportunity, right?
Yes.
Isn't this the opportunity to move forward, the opportunity to let this be the best thing that ever happened to the Mariners?
Yeah, before we get there, maybe this will be a little bridge into the conversation. Can I just ask one question out loud? Maybe this is just a former player perspective. But Logan Gilbert and Kelenic, and obviously the MLBPA, was that offensive to them? If you're Kelenic and Logan Gilbert, are you offended by that? Or is a player, are you like, okay, good. I'm glad you just put it out there, because now I'm going to make this blow up in your face. Like, as a competitor, you know, is someone like, good, I'm glad now that you're actually on the record saying something that lots of other people are doing, and you put it out there. Well, for me and the union to like tee up, and now I get to, like, I told, to me, that's very, very different than some of the other shots that were taken. Like, people have run with that.
I don't think so.
I mean, they were offended. Stanton called it the low point in their relationship with Kelenic and Rodriguez the last 2 days. So he knows what they're dealing with and the hole they're in.
I think, unfortunately, Brock, because of the team's reputation,
okay,
and the culture, you know, that it's never been the best baseball culture here.
Yep.
I think it's challenging for players to hear that stuff and not have the, okay, what am I even, what, like, why does this have to be my long-term lot in life when it doesn't anymore?
Okay.
Right?
You
could be right. There may be an element where they find a way to kind of build off of it. But I would worry about that.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think that speaks culturally to, some of the problems that they have certainly had. And if you're a player coming in from the outside to an organization that has the longest drought of playoffs, mm-hmm, then culturally you look at and go, what is wrong with this place? That maybe that solidifies that view. I guess if I'm Jared Kelenic and knowing the way that dude is wired, like, awesome. Now you just gave me you gave me every opportunity to just blow it up here in March, and now maybe I've got the players union behind me.
It's not
me.
Like he's going to be a bad guy during the 6 years that he's here. The question is, at the end of those 6 years, is he still so hurt from all this that he just says peace? Right? I mean, like, are you able to truly turn this thing around? And look, maybe money talks at the end of all this. I'll get to him, and I have some thoughts on what this means for him and for Julio. I honestly am going to try to look at some positives here, because I really believe that they're there. I'm not just trying to be a contrarian.
I mean, there's, you're many things.
I'm a contrarian.
Well, you're always so positive, and people get so sick and tired.
No, I'm just a contrarian, and usually everybody else is positive, so I have to be negative. But
everybody likes it, but guess what?
What?
Mike's all gone. Contrarian.
There's the word. Thanks, Howdy. Appreciate that.
And where the heck is Howdy?
Don't know. he's an MIA.
But boy, could we use him.
Yeah.
Is he really crossing the Antarctica with Cutco? Like, he's finally paying
on
off.
The Shackleford expedition. Yeah. His endurance down there.
Captain Cook.
Wow.
Mr. Popper's Penguin. Howdy kind of looks like one of those penguins.
Saw Cutco. Cutco was on display in Costco last weekend. I thought.
Oh, yeah. It's Howdy's thing. Yeah, he did a great job selling those knives. All right. Look, there are some opportunities here. If the Mariners do have cultural problems, which they've been accused of for a long time, here's your chance. Here's your chance to go find the right person and change your image, to change your culture in so many ways, to build real, lasting, meaningful trust with your community and with your fans and with the players. So you were accused of being cheap, right? That's a long-standing accusation against the Mariners, and Mather unfortunately offered some level of proof of that in his comments. Well, bring in a CEO who could teach the whole organization how to spend money to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Start by spending money on the right CEO. I asked a little bit around about, you know, around the game, not knowing with the Mariners, but I asked around a little bit, trying to just determine what's out there for them as their next CEO or maybe CEO and president. They could split the jobs, that you could have Jerry DePoto be the president, have just bring in a money person to be a CEO.
I was thinking about, so some teams have like a baseball guy as president,
yep.
Theo Epstein type.
Yep. You can
and
do
then
it
some
that
have
way.
A businessman, a yep. Kevin Mather type.
Yeah, and you can do it either way. I mean, but somebody's going to have to change the culture in some way. So the CEO job is the one, I guess, that we're probably more focused on. I mean, Theo is the moonshot. That's the biggest
We've
name out there.
We've been talking about that for years. Yes.
There's no I can't imagine a world that it would happen. But you've got to ask. You are obligated to reach out and find out whether or not Theo would take the job. Whatever the price, it's worth
it. You thought breaking the curse was a big deal? You thought ending 108
two
years
curses.
Was a big
yep.
deal?
Yeah, you bring in Theo.
He breaks the third curse.
Spend whatever you got. Give him an ownership stake. I still think he says no. But okay, that's got to be your first phone call. I've heard two other names out there that are interesting. This is not from Mariner circles. I have no idea if they're interested in them.
David Grosby.
David Grosby would be great at this. Yes. One name I've heard is I think it's Ald, Brian Ald, A-U-L-D. He's the president in Tampa Bay, just supposed to be a really smart money guy. And obviously what they've done in Tampa is impressive. Younger guy, West Coast guy. I think he's a Stanford guy. So he's a name that now he's the president already. So maybe president CEO is enough.
It's like he's from the Bay Area, went to Stanford, then Harvard Business.
Yeah. So there's one name. The really interesting name that I heard is a guy named Chris Park. And Brock, I think you'll find his bio intriguing. Executive Vice President of Product and Marketing at Major League Baseball until a few years ago. Harvard guy, went to Harvard and Harvard Business School. He's about 41, 42, early 40s. Worked at Facebook. Left Major League Baseball to go be the CEO of Gen G, which is an esports company, for the last 2 years. Supposed to be a really, really bright guy, highly thought of, has CEO experience, has baseball experience, has marketing experience, product experience. I mean, put all the tech elements that he would bring to the table, the youth movement. I don't know the guy, but when I heard the name and then kind of just read the bio, I was like, yeah, that sounds interesting.
Wikipedia says Christopher Park, American professional wrestler, WWE,
not
known under
Chris
his
Park.
Ring name The Abyss.
It's not that
yes.
Chris Park.
Oh,
no.
Oh yes. Not that.
No, in fact, when I first Googled Chris Park, I got a park somewhere in Texas.
Named Chris Park?
Yes.
A very boring name for
right?
Park.
Oh, where do you live? Right. I live over by Chris Park.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all right. Yeah, that was the first thing that came up. Anyway.
But the other Chris Park, his Twitter handle does say X of San Francisco and Seattle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't know what he did here.
So there you go. Maybe that's when he was at Facebook. Anyway, intriguing name. Not because I know him, but just when you hear that kind of bio, like the only reason I'm giving you these names is just you have an opportunity to go out and change how you're viewed. Go do it. This is view this as the best thing that ever happened to your organization. View this as an opportunity to be completely different.
See, Mike, you said earlier, and I'll kind of challenge this point a little bit, and I think it leads then into this discussion of what's next. You said earlier that the Mariners are viewed as cheap, that the fans think that they're cheap. See, I don't know that, and I don't certainly have the pulse of every Mariner fan, and I'm sure there's many that would say that. See, I think most Mariner fans and why the pound of flesh was necessary over the last couple days and the absolute irate anger was this is the Mariners don't care about winning.
That's a good point. That's fair. You're right. It's because not necessarily cheap. It's business over baseball.
Yeah, I mean, their stadium is incredible, and they
good
pour
point.
Back into it, and the fan experience and all of that. I mean, I think of cheap. I think of the Oakland A's. I think of cheap.
You know
I think of these, right?
You're absolutely right.
It is, are you wanting to win at every and all costs?
You're you couldn't be more right.
So
thank you. I will cede my, and please strike that, Kyle, from the record if possible. Can we strike that?
We'll see in post-prod. Usually Howdy handles this stuff. We've seen last
Clean
week, this
up.
Is getting messy.
No, you're right. I should withdraw that comment. That's probably not the most common Mariner fan view. You're right. It's this idea that business is more important than
winning.
And
these 45 minutes inflamed it,
mm-hmm.
as have some of the folks that used to be there. Chuck's comments, right, and others' comments over the last few decades. Are you willing to win at all costs? That is what this fan base wants. And frankly, okay, they look at the Sounders and go, the Sounders do. They've been world champs. They look at the Storm and go, Storm do. They pay their players, keep their best players, brought amazing people in. The Seahawks do. They've won and won a world championship and do whatever it takes. Are you willing to win at every cost? Is every day you wake up, John Stanton, and everyone in leadership, every day you wake up, do your eyes pop open like Russ's do and say, what am I doing today, and Pete's do, to be a champion? And those 45 minutes, Mike, inflamed this fan base to say, you're not. Mm. You're not. You're worried about club control. You're worried about... You know, this experience, you're worried about, you know, your players speaking good enough English. You're worried about all these things. But at the beginning and end of every day, and I'm a fan and I'm a fanatic and I'm sick of 20 years of not playoffs. So you better bring in this better be in a cultural awakening to do everything in your power, every minute of every hour of every day, Mr. Stanton, to win. because that's what this fan base covets. And I think that's why the outrage was so fierce.
Yeah, I think you're
and
right.
That is why I don't know if Chris Park is a winner. I don't know if Ald is a winner. I don't know if it's got to be somebody in baseball that comes from a winner. I know Theo Epstein is, right? Well. And I know that he changed, you know, certainly the Chicago culture in that way. I don't think that was the issue in Boston.
Well, you say that, but and he did change a lot of the culture in Boston, but he wasn't the president. I mean, what's interesting about the Boston situation is that Larry Lucchino was the guy who was the president and did a lot of that sort of cultural shift. He's the one who hired Theo after they had been in San Diego. And Lucchino's like, nobody likes him.
Yep.
I mean, like, he's widely disliked, but culture changer.
Yep.
Right. Figured out how to harness the massive amount of revenue that the Red Sox. I mean, in some ways, you want that president to be a creative revenue kind of person. And then you want to go spend that money on the product. You need somebody in my. I get what you're saying, but the president of an organization doesn't need to be a baseball player. It's OK for that person to be a money person, to be a business person.
Yes.
But yes. But. This is why the first thing I said was go find somebody who can teach the organization how to spend money to make it. You got to go spend money to make money.
Yep.
Hire the right people. I mean, what did Larry Lucchino do? He's not a baseball guy. You're right. But he hired Theo. Now, eventually he drove him out, which was another problem. But he hired Theo. I mean, like that's
got a ring,
right? I mean, like that's how that worked. Two of them under Theo. Right. So
well, that is the opportunity.
Before he left in his gorilla suit.
In my mind, that is now the opportunity, as you wanted to spin it to the opportunity. That is now the opportunity that you have from this day forward. And it sounds like on a Tuesday morning that Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto were pretty inflamed and had the opportunity to share some of their outrage, some of their hurt, some of their frustrations. And, you know, in their positions as both manager of those players, as general manager of the operation, then you now have a chance from this day moving forward and maybe even more empowered with your voice publicly than ever before to say, this is what we got to do to win. Like, I'm tired of this. I'm sick of this. You know, that this has got to be that opportunity from this day forward to do everything in your power, whatever position you're in as manager, as general manager, whoever the new president, CEO, and you as well, Mr. Stanton, to prove to this fan base that every action you're making is to win, because it's going to be now more front and center than ever before.
You need to go. Brock, you're on fire today. Let me just say.
Well, last Tuesday, I was lukewarm.
You think?
And you spit me out of your mouth.
I mean.
I just gave a lot of you knows.
You didn't have much to say.
I gave a lot of you knows.
You didn't have a ton to say last week. But this week, you're bringing the hot fire, and I'm loving it. I'm enjoying this as I judge your performance.
Thanks.
On a week-to-week basis.
Well, whoever wrote up our little bio of our presentation last week was also a little lukewarm.
I don't think they mentioned you. They knew you didn't have anything to say, so they just kind of left you out.
Kyle and Salk discuss the Seahawks.
The real goal, what's the goal? Goal is to win a World Series, right? Yep. That's the goal? Your baseball team. Goal is to win a World Series. What do you need to do now to get closer to that goal? Hire who you've got to hire. Change whatever you need to your organization that for too long has not been innovative enough. Use this to start over. As I've said before, change your uniforms. Change your name if you have to. Truly make change and give fans something to get excited about. Because you've started the process with this rebuild. You've already taken the first of the arrows. This is like a death knell in terms of arrow. Great. But that gives you the opportunity to, like Lazarus, rise again. Let's go.
You've been on that name change thing for a while.
Yeah, I sure have.
You now see this door cracked, and you're going to put your foot through it.
Well, certainly uniform change. Uniform for sure.
You want those, what were they, the steelhead?
Sure. Just get rid of the teal. Repeal the teal. Repeal the teal. But this is your opportunity to honestly think outside the box about everything. Everything can be on the table now.
Yep.
Hold everyone in your organization accountable to push forward. End any form of old boys club that's persisted in baseball forever and change your image. Allow your image to change and have it be focused on winning. And there's some simple ways you can do that. To start, look, one of the big things you are going to risk here in the union element side of it is you're going to risk a grievance, Brock. We come back to Kelnick and Gilbert here. Mm-hmm. What you do risk is that they file a grievance against you over service time. Well, you can avoid that. Give them a legitimate shot to make the opening day roster.
Yep.
I'm not saying you got to take them. If they're not the right guy, they're not the right guy. If they're not ready, they're not ready. Their development has to come first, because what's the goal? Win a World Series. What's the best way to do that? Develop your young guys like Kelnick and Gilbert and Julio properly. So do what you need to do to get them ready. But if they're ready, don't mess around. Mm-hmm. Throw them on the opening day roster. Make your fans happy. Make them happy. And avoid a grievance.
But no, not this year with Kelnick, right?
If he's ready. If he's ready.
3 weeks at 21 or a year at 27, 28.
I'm not saying he's ready. I'm saying if he's ready.
I'm saying ready or not, you starting in Tacoma, pal.
I don't know. I think you've got to, if you're going to have a grievance potentially against you, it's going to cost you, could cost you the same amount of money.
And the grievance is a long shot. As Jerry DePoto said Tuesday morning, we're talking about a guy who's got 21 plate appearances.
I don't know that the grievance is a long shot. I don't know that it's a long shot at all with that information out there.
Prove it. Hey, I've got 21 plate appearances above single A. Maybe. Why am I not in the bigs?
But the guy says we're going to hold him back for a month. You're going to see him in late April? I'm not saying that he definitely wins the case, but I don't think it's a long shot. That's my completely non-legally binding opinion. But I mean, the president of the organization said we're going to have him up in a month.
Right.
I mean, you're going to tell me that much is going
to fly by.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. But I think he does have potentially a case. So just give it a fair shot. Kyle, I'm not saying you start him in the bigs. But give it a fair shot. If he's the best left fielder for your team on April 1st, start him. Let's go.
Who was that little shortstop that had the great hands that we got from the Pirates? Jack Wilson?
Jack Wilson.
Do you remember watching him at spring training? That dude's hands were unbelievable.
He's one of the best defensive players I've ever seen in my life.
Between him and Brendan Ryan, they were both went through a wizards. Streak.
Yes.
But do you remember he was kind of a tool, and he gave, I believe at that point, was it wedgie or walk? The opportunity, yeah, because he was just being a little whiner. And he did something and you taught me this a decade ago. And you're like, see, sometimes managers love this.
Yeah.
They get a little in and they get an opportunity to drive in a nail, to make a point, right? When they get that opportunity and Wilson provided it. I got to be honest with you, like 40 minutes of this conversation and listening to lots of the conversation yesterday, seeing it even make the national waves, like there's a huge part of me that if I'm Julio and I'm Jared and even Logan Gilbert, I'll include in this crew because I think he's a pretty gifted guy. Like, man, here is your chance. Here is your – you get a chance to be Baker Mayfield, man. You get a chance to totally turn an organization and a community. When Baker was drafted number one, he didn't sit and pout. You loved it, Salk. You're like, oh, I love Baker. Look at this.
Yep.
I'm going to turn Cleveland into a winner. Like and they had to fire John Dorsey and fire Hugh Jackson and fire everybody and fire this stupid GM and totally change the whole thing. But it took Baker. It took his conviction and his playmaking and his belief.
They're getting the winner. They're getting somebody that's going to turn that franchise around.
If I'm Julio and I'm Jared and I'm Logan and I'm these young, talented guys, I'm actually looking at this going, wow. Well, you just opened the door for now our manager as well and Jerry DePoto, who look like they're going to take it and run with it. And I would.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I'm Scott and I'm Jerry, like, here we go.
Yep.
Like, this fan base is inflamed. They are furious. And I got,
but
like,
but not
more
at the players. Like, in some ways, it bonds them with the players.
Yes.
That's why I keep looking at
now
them.
We have
I'm
a
with
shared
you on this.
Grievance.
I am with you on that. I don't
I
know whether they'll take
in
it
my
that way.
Sales to make change now. And I will get more benefit of the doubt, actually, from the fans.
Yep.
And these young players, like, honestly, if I'm Jared's agent, I'm like, you just got a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You did. These guys just put it out there. They put their stuff out there. And now you, if you blow it up this spring, actually have a legit opportunity.
Yeah.
And you have a chance to do something with a starving fan base that, oh, by the way, when they were good, will fill that place up and are dying to have a winner.
Mm.
And Cleveland set off fireworks like the 4th of July when they won a playoff game and nearly burned the city down this last year because they had a similar drought. It's been over 20-some years. Like, to me, I don't know. And I'm not trying to be contrarian, and I'm not trying to say, you know, not have a pound of flesh and come after these guys, and they were all wrong. Yeah, they were. They were totally all wrong. Totally all wrong. And put all that business out there. And now you've got an opportunity.
This is an opportunity. I agree.
It is.
Whether or not those guys choose to take it that way, we'll find out.
Yep.
But I agree with you that there's hot fire from Brock today.
great.
You've been eating at Famous Dave's, man? You've been going barbecue? Is that what's been happening?
I had that Georgia.
Georgia pork?
You have the Georgia chop pork?
I had the Georgia chop pork.
Yeah, well, you know, they're back open, limited indoor dining, Brock. Tukwila, Tacoma, Everett.
Me and the freaking ghosts were in the kitchen. Woo.
Oh, you doing the ghost kitchen? Sheesh. Look, if you haven't been to Famous Dave's, St. Louis-style spare ribs, whole country roasted chicken, Texas beef brisket. Brock mentioned the Georgia chopped pork. If you go to Famous Dave's, you'll start delivering points with the kind of emphasis and fire that Brock has had over the last 40 minutes. How does that sound? That's the kind of promise I can make you. I mean, I can't guarantee it in any way, but I can make it to you. I can break it.
If tons you want to wow at your next business meeting, eat a Georgia chopped pork.
Like Brock. Like, yes. If you want to wow like Brock has here over the last 40 minutes, yeah, absolutely. They got options available for catering to go. You got Famous Feasts. You got Pitmaster favorite combos. Because you're not barbecuing now. It's not barbecue weather.
No, I've been trying
weather.
To barbecue. I can. It's raining. You got to go to Famous Dave's. It's your only option.
It's much easier. Tukwila, Tacoma, Everett. Limited indoor dining from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, Famous Dave's, America's favorite barbecue. You know what the Silver Fox would always say, Brock? He had
a
lot of
Lundberg
great
one or two?
No, neither.
He would say,
I mean, you'd start with that. Once he eventually got words out of his mouth, the Silver Fox would always say, one of his many sayings, he's a good sayings guy, was if you're talking, you're losing. I always like that saying. I'm not entirely sure what it means, but I like it. If you're talking, you're losing. I mean, he came from a sales background, Silver Fox. So, yeah, he'd say, if you're talking, you're losing. He probably still says, if you're talking, you're losing.
My bat, my ball, my butt.
He says that, too.
Okay.
He's a big sayings guy. I like a good saying.
Slogans.
Sayings. Slams. For him, I think they're more sayings. Yeah. but that's a great segue to where we're going here. If you're talking, you're losing. Seahawks haven't been talking.
Nope.
Russ did a lot of talking, or
anyone who would listen. Yes. He was talking.
His court was talking.
Ellen DeGeneres, Dan Patrick, Jason Lockenfora.
You name it. They were talking. Seahawks didn't really do any talking, Brock. It seems like they've just been doing a little doing.
Yep. We kind of had that sense, did we not? I think two podcasts ago when this inferno began.
Two podcasts ago, yes.
Uh-huh.
That's how I view time.
Well, 3, 4 score and 7 years ago.
Our forefathers.
Yes. We kind of had this sense that Pete and John weren't going to do anything. And in fact, with no combine to even have to speak at, they weren't going to go seeking out Pat Kerwin. They weren't going to go seeking out Jay Glazer. They were not going to find themselves on a national show. Then more than likely, they would just not be talking. Because what would the Silver Fox say? They'd be winning.
If you're talking, you're losing.
And if you're not talking, you're winning because you're working behind the scenes, doing what you got to do, and you let Russ and you let his camp and you let his agent and you let his people air their dirty laundry or their grievances or whatever they want to do, especially in the wake of the Super Bowl, which I do think, honestly, more than ever, and I said at the time, I believe it now, that as Russ sat in that box with the commish and watched a young Russ and watched what he hopes is an old Russ, a lot of this was built from that experience of watching the Super Bowl and watching Tom Brady win his 7th and be the greatest of all time. And know that Russ is probably, well, not probably, he's never going to get there. And so he aired his frustrations with that, and he wants help, and he needs help. And the Seahawks did what?
Well, they didn't
Seahawks
say anything.
The Seahawks said what?
They didn't say a lot.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. John said nothing. Pete said nothing. And then a couple weeks later, what does Cowherd say earlier in the week? Wow, the Seahawks look like they're going to, and talking to the Seahawks folks, looks like they're going to maybe add to that O-line.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Played it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly. Right out of a group. And you spent last segment, Mike, talking about trust. You know, talking about these Mariners and building trust. And we talked about John Schneider and him getting an extension because of the trust that he and Pete have, the trust in that building, the trust under that roof down there in Renton, that they know what they're doing. Go ahead, Russ. Go ahead, let your camp go. Go ahead, it can make headlines. You could be in the news cycle for 48 hours. It can be the biggest story for these 48 hours. And yeah, we may field all sorts of calls, which actually we're going to turn as a positive. You mean all these teams are calling me and I'm going to get to learn what the market wants and what the market may do for other guys and I get more and more intel? Great. I'll actually take that little news cycle and somehow turn it as a positive to gain and learn the market. So great. But are we going to respond publicly? No. Nope. And in so doing, I think they win this once again.
Yeah, they're sucking the oxygen out of the story, right? Like, if there's nothing more to make the story continue to live on, then there's nothing else to talk about. So they sucked a lot of the oxygen out of the story for now. I mean, it's not going to go away just because they didn't talk about it for a little while, but they calmed everything down. And yep. and if you go back, I think it was one podcast ago, maybe two.
Call them episodes.
Oh, is that what we call
one
them?
One episode.
Yeah, three-step plan for the Seahawks. One, make peace. Two, deal with Bobby and Jamal Adams. Figure out what you're going to do there. And then three, listen to Russ and fix the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty easy three-step plan, by the way. I mean, to come up with.
Easy to lay out.
Yeah.
For sure.
I didn't say it's easy
Mike,
to execute.
It's frankly brilliant.
Yeah. Is one, well of the better, is one of the better three-step plans I've created. By doing it, I mean, I don't have to do
not
it.
My
they've
problem.
Got they're the ones who actually have to do it. But it seems like they're starting that process. Making peace process by sucking some of the air out of the room. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but you know, listening to Russ, fixing the line of scrimmage. Okay, you're already starting to leak some of that information. You got to go actually do it. The whole Bobby and Jamal Adams thing, you know, they're going to have to work that out behind the scenes. And I'm sure eventually we'll kind of see where those two are going. But, you know, I would like to see them focused on those areas. That's why when I saw like the Zach Ertz stuff, like what? I don't need Zach Ertz. I don't need Zach Ertz.
Nope.
I need you to fix the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
Yep.
Start there.
Yep.
We'll figure out Zach Ertz some other time. Luxury item for now. Start off by fixing the line of scrimmage on offense and defense, and then let's go from there, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Yeah, yes, and yes, and yes, and it is going to be fascinating, honestly. Like we knew this offseason would be unique, as was last year, but last year we had a combine. Last year we had some pre-draft visits, or you know, but things before things totally shut down in mid-March, so you're able to put some hay in the barn and kind of have a lot of conversation and lay out plans. Man, this can be bizarre for the NFL to not, you know, they're a group that for 12 months a year markets itself. It sells itself. And the media will certainly do that. And between Deshaun Watson and I guess Russ and some other trades and everything else, that they'll still find fodder, but you're not going to hear from their people. And I honestly don't know when you're going to hear from John and Pete next.
I guess, you said this, I was wrong. I thought Pete would talk at some point. I thought we would hear from Pete and he would do his thing where he just sort of, you know, makes everything better. I thought we would hear from Pete. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that we haven't. But if you're talking, you're losing. So I guess he just, you know, found a different way to do it this time. I don't know. I am a little surprised. You really didn't think we'd hear from him?
I don't. When are we going to hear from him next?
Whenever he wants.
But when will that be? Why does he have to say anything?
What advantage is there? Talk, he can.
I guess what advantage is there to talk? And he doesn't want hard knocks around. He didn't want any of that attention around. I think they're looking
at this. But he's because he's good at taking responsibility, making everybody feel better. That's what Pete does. He's been great at it for a decade here.
Go in the kumbaya room and kumbaya.
Well, I mean, okay. But he's good at sort of diffusing a lot of those things publicly.
And this has seemingly been diffused.
Yeah, so we didn't need to. It just got diffused.
Didn't need to.
But has it, or is it just we just haven't heard anything about it for a week?
I think it's been, I mean, that's up to Russ. Does Russ want to throw some more fuel on a fire?
Russ would probably, if he were here, would probably say it depends. You're going to get me some offensive line help?
What are you doing behind the scenes?
Right.
And I guess that's my point. This is all going to be behind the scenes. We're going to push into March next episode. And then all of a sudden, we're going to be 8 weeks from a draft, and then we're going to be 4 weeks from a draft. I mean, when are we going to? I guess it will be, and I would think, because they normally do a pre-draft meeting, right? And John Schneider usually comes to the station and chats, and we'll probably do that from afar. But and they'll hold a pre-draft Zoom meeting as they did a year ago, and it may be a month and a half before we hear anything out of those folks down there. And to the Silver Fox point, Mike. If you're talking, you're losing.
How would you handle Bobby and Jamal?
Bobby's going to be delicate because you remember who Bobby's agent is.
Bobby?
Yes. That's going to be a delicate one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to go to him and tell him that the performance was this, that, and the other, you've got to go to him.
Correct.
You don't get a middleman. There's no one who can sort of filter that information to him. You know, we talked about Theo earlier, Theo Epstein. You know, a lot of the stories I've always heard is that part of the reason that Theo Epstein, Larry Lucchino relationship broke up is that was over contract negotiation and Theo didn't have an agent. And one side of that story is that he didn't like hearing the things that Larry Lucchino said.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately that led to their breakup. I don't know if that's true. There may be a bunch of other reasons that led to it, but I've always heard that. And it's always been in the back of my mind of, you know, when you don't have an agent, that maybe that's an opportunity, you know, maybe that's a reason for there to be that kind of, difficulty in communication, so to speak. So,
and I would think if you called him up, there's going to be a lot of difficulty in conversation and communication. You want to do what? I was just first team all pro. I was Pro Bowler again. What are we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What are we talking about? Well, we're talking about a salary cap situation, Bobby. And we're talking about a veteran and a leader and a captain. And we're talking about some play that was not as productive right. as it's been in years past.
Or, say, what's your man got to do with me?
Yep. That's right.
How long that's you right. had that problem?
That's right.
Keep my name out your mouth.
Is that the stereo the MCs?
We put the deal together. And sorry, you want me to take a penny less? Not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then did you cut him?
You trade him?
I don't know how you even broker a conversation.
Maybe you don't. All right, so let's say you can't. Do you cut or trade him or do nothing? Because if he's, I mean, look, I think we would agree the best thing to do would be to have Bobby for less. Okay, but let's say that.
Give him some money. There you go. We're going to convert this. You're going to take a little bit less, but you're going to get all of it guaranteed in one lump sum.
Doesn't that eventually, don't you have to pay the piper on that eventually?
A little bit. A little bit. Depending on what the last couple years of the terms are and how much dead money there is. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Yep.
Well, maybe that works. Maybe that's the way to do it. But if that doesn't work, you're in a tough spot there because you still got to sign Jamal, right? I assume you're going to sign Jamal Adams or are you going to trade him?
You have to sign them.
Okay.
I mean, two firsts and a third.
Okay.
Like you have to.
So you're gonna sign Jamal Adams. Are you going to sign him to a crazy deal because he thinks he's not a safety? He thinks he's a pass rusher.
Do you know, Mike, that he set the all-time record in the history of the league?
I know.
Do guys like that get paid?
I know. So are you going to sign? What are you going to sign him? Like, you going to sign him to safety money? Or are you going to say, yeah, you're right. You're a hybrid pass rusher, so I'm going to pay you in between those two numbers? Dangerous game to walk down, right? Isn't that a dangerous road?
Buddha's at about $14 million. Set the bar for some of these safeties.
Yeah, but I'm not a safety. Cool, pay Buddha whatever you want. I'm not a safety. I'm a pass rusher. How many sacks does Buddha have?
Guys with 9.5 sacks make $20 million a year, man.
Okay, you're gonna pay him $20 million to play safety.
No.
So what? So he may not sign for 12, 13, 14.
Yep.
And it's a really tough spot because
so you wonder why John Schneider's not talking.
No kidding. He's working.
Yes,
he didn't have time to talk.
Nope.
He's got two impossible conversations to have right now.
Yes.
Both the Bobby, and that's why they're, I said it's an easy plan, hard to execute. Both the Bobby and Jamal Adams conversations, I think, are incredibly difficult for the Seahawks and for John Schneider.
And in some ways, powder kegs.
Yes.
Jamal is loud,
mm-hmm.
loud and proud, and is willing to make waves. And he made enough waves to get out of New York. So he is loud and he is very, very proud. And Bobby is the captain. Bobby has as much equity. I mean, the media in this town, right? The people that cover sure. this team think you're out of your mind to even consider a conversation with him. They all think that he is the gold standard with the gold shoes and a 99 rating and the best linebacker in the game, and absolutely do every penny. So he's got the benefit of not only the fan base, but all the local media members. So you got two powder kegs. So Russ is complaining about.
And in the meantime, you've got Russ who wants offensive line help.
Yeah, Russ is complaining about getting hit. Great, fine, yeah. Let him complain. Go on Dan Patrick, go on Colin, whatever. I don't. You know what I'm dealing with here? I'm dealing with these two situations that I don't.
And you know what Russ is saying? What's your man got to do with me? Nah, how long you had that problem? Seriously, he's saying, dude, I don't care.
I'm sorry
you got yourself into that spot. But
you made
like,
the trade for Jamal, and you signed Bobby to that deal.
Yeah, and he's saying, well, I asked for superstars, but I meant, you know, Jack Conklin. Not a safety who thinks he's a pass rusher and is, but wants to get paid like one.
Danny doesn't think this comes to a head with Jamal until training camp and kind of points to Bobby's negotiation and everything else. I think it is such a huge chip at the table that sets the dominoes for the rest of these moves that I don't know how you leave that till training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you think he's going to play at his final year of his deal. which I'm sure he believes there's no chance in the world that you traded for me and you in good faith said we were going to get something done. Yep. So
they got a couple of really, really big challenges. Three of them there, right?
And they got four draft picks.
Right.
And by the way, they got four draft picks.
It's not like you can go use the draft to go help. I mean, it's bizarre. It's strange.
And KJ wants to get paid. And KJ's not taking a hometown discount either. And Carlos Dunlap, he wants his. He bet on himself. He wants to get paid. Man, the thing is just, yeah, honestly, like you just start talking about all these things. Why do you think John didn't have time to respond or react or do any of that publicly? Because he's got about eight other fires that he's got to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is a quarterback, and I know he's the biggest deal, and I know you want to keep him happy and blah, 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 blah. But as far as the team around him and winning 12 games and winning your division and hoping to do again in a very competitive division, you got a lot bigger fish to fry.
Maybe this is putting you on the spot, but are there guys that could legitimately help fix the line of scrimmage? Like, are there free agents? Is there a Jack Conklin this year?
Ooh, that's, I don't know that yet. I know this draft has lots of guards and tackles, a huge number. They're going to be drafted in the first two rounds. I do know that. I do know that college football, for one of the first times in a while, is going to have a pretty rich supply of some tackles and guards that can be difference makers. And I
what
also
about in free agency? I mean, well, like, I also is there a know, Jack Conklin type who's going to be out there available?
I have not okay. looked at that. Listen, I don't.
I know. I well, you're know. An NFL guy now.
I am. But I also
Brandon Scherf, Joe Tooney, Trent Williams, Alex Mack, Corey Linsley, a couple of the highest priced free agents.
Yeah, a couple old guys in there. But then again, Whitworth was old in this system,
yep.
And they made the job easier. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that I guess that's the thing that I would come back to, and I would continue to come back to, is this isn't Tom Cable saying I can make anything work because we can cut block. Can't do that anymore. So we saw the challenges with that in some of his blocking schemes, and especially pass blocking schemes, are burdensome, to say the least, on offensive linemen. This is a system that should make the job easier. When you look at Austin Blythe and Austin Corbett and the guys that the Rams have around Andrew Whitworth, you've got guys that were traded for late round picks. Mm. You got a late round pick. You got a college tackle that you turned into a guard, right? You were able to not have to spend is the Atlanta Falcons did five first round picks on your offensive line. So in saying that, this should be a little bit easier than having to pay $15 million to one guy. This should be, say those names again for me there.
Scherf, Lindsley, Mack, Tooney,
Trent Williams.
So if Trent Williams, you know, wants to play, now you have Dwayne Brown, and Dwayne's going, oh, by the way, did I mention Dwayne's going into the final year of his deal?
Mm-hmm.
As we talked about Dunlap, and we talked about Adams, and we talked about Bobby, and we talked about KJ, and we talked about all these, Owen Jack Griffin, and talk about all these players and all these needs and trying to put this puzzle all together.
You only have how many more, two more years with DK, right?
Correct. And yep. He's going to want to get paid after next year.
You think?
Yeah.
He's going to want to get paid. A lot.
Sure. A lot.
That's like coming. Lot, that lot, conversation lot. Is on its way.
Yeah. So not to dodge your question, Mike, I don't think that there is. And you paid Shell last year, and you're going to, I think, pay him, what, $8, $9, $10 million bucks this year to be your right tackle?
You sure about that? I mean, you sure?
No.
I mean, that could be a cut candidate, could right? Be. Like, could well, be. We're going to move on there, and we're going to bring some, I mean, Trent Williams maybe wants to be a right tackle. Like, all of a sudden, maybe you got a little off. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, you've got a lot of work to do, and you're right. You got a lot of pipers about to be paid,
yep.
And a lot of checks about to come due. So, yeah, John Schneider, super busy right now trying to figure all that out. You watch this Cam Newton thing? Have you watched this whole thing?
Was that right up my alley and almost check every one of my boxes?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, actually, yes.
Yeah, it was interesting. So Cam gets into it. Which version do you have, Kyle? Do you have the short one or the long one?
I've got about 30 seconds here.
Okay, so you've got Cam, who, you know, this kid's going after him, right? He keeps calling him a free agent, says he's about to be poor. Is that the one we have here?
You're a free agent. You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
Okay, so that's sort of
kind of gives you the spirit of it.
That's the first part. There's another one, though, that Cam posted on his Instagram where afterwards Cam goes back and talks to the kid at the end of the day and is trying to ask him, hey, what'd you do today?
Mm-hmm.
were you good today? Were you, you know, all your talk, were you, you know, here's Cam talking with the kid later.
No, ain't no disrespect. You know, if you want some attention, I'm going to give you some attention. The right way, bro. The right way. When do y'all play?
We play tomorrow.
What was y'all record today then?
1-2. No, 2-1.
What did you do? No, I wasn't able to see because y'all was too.
Cameras on me.
All right, bro. What did he do, man? Does he play?
He got speed.
He got speed.
No, he's letting his speed. Yeah.
Oh.
You're going to see.
Nah, you ain't. Don't act shy. Bro. Don't act shy.
Kid wants Cam to go home and watch him on YouTube. Seriously. The kid wanted Cam to go watch his film. He couldn't even get what his record was that day right. Anyway, the audio doesn't fully do it justice. I would actually recommend watching it, seeing the smile on Cam's face and seeing how he's trying to kind of diffuse it and teach the kid something, I think is worthwhile. I can't help it. I like Cam. I'm predisposed to like him and take his side in this. But watching it, it's not just that the kid's out of line. I mean, he is, but he's a kid. I mean, whatever. I thought Cam really did his best to say, I'm going to go back and not that he felt embarrassed. Cam's made enough money. I don't think he's going to be poor anytime soon. And he's out there trying to prove that he still has he's in a tough spot trying to prove that he's still one of the top 32 quarterbacks in the game. Okay, fine. But I thought he went out of his way to try to teach the kid. Yep. And I think when he says, I'm trying to do this the right way, whether it was the right way or not, I think he truly believed that he was trying to do something right instead of wrong.
Yeah, the first part, like if you just read the quotes, you're like, oh my God.
Right.
Come on, man. You're screaming back how rich you are to a 15-year-old heckler.
Right.
But he did all of that with a smile. I think he honestly believed that he'd be like, "Oh man, this kid's funny.
Right?
That's funny."
He thought he had a little smack talker, and he can go back and forth with them, and it would be funny.
And he would just silence him. And he kind of like, you know.
Yep.
And he didn't. And that kid did not.
No,
stop.
That kid had more to say.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a future sports talk radio host.
I don't know.
That 15-year-old.
We'll see.
I think the second time, if you're going to do that, it's probably not going to be in a group scene with all that emotion and all the other players that you're going to reach them. I think you're going to pull that coach aside and say, hey, that little 15-year-old kid, I want to talk to him after this.
Yeah. Hey,
nobody around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then maybe you teach and have a life lesson opportunity. Here I am critiquing and judging. I got a kick out of all of it. I thought it was just absolutely hilarious in every way. I thought the 15-year-old heckler was just an immature little punk, but a competitive sucker that didn't back down. I thought Cam trying to approach it, and maybe he would say, I don't want to do that one-on-one. I want it to be a lesson for all these other teenagers out here.
Yeah.
You know, and you and I both know one thing about Cam. He is gigantic.
Huge.
He has a presence
yes.
that is, you talk about 32 other starting quarterbacks in the league. I don't know how many of them carry just a presence them.
Remember what John Schneider said, right? Guy who tilts the room when he walks in. He physically tilts it. He's gigantic.
Yes, he does.
We've told the story a million times, but when we were at the Super Bowl, Brock was nice enough to bring me to one of the parties. Yeah. And
plus one?
Yes, I was his plus one.
Yep.
As we were leaving the party, we all but walked directly into Cam Newton, who was walking in.
Sulks,
shows you just how uncool we were Sulks versus how
free
cool
agent.
He is.
You can be a free agent. You can be a free agent.
You think I wanted to leave? I mean, I'm with the teetotaler over here. I mean, like, there's only the party was only going to last so long, right? So we're leaving, and he lights up the room, man.
Yeah,
you see that smile? He looks famous.
Yep.
When you see him in person, he just looks
famous.
And
he's 6'6", and he's just huge, broad-shouldered, and he just has a huge presence to him.
And a smile. Honestly, it lights up the whole room. It's crazy. Yep. He really does have great presence. And I think you have it right there where I like Cam. He's made mistakes. There are things about him that aren't perfect. And I don't know, there's something about that I like.
You think he ever starts again? You think he's a legitimate starter, or he's
legitimate?
Just
no, but I think he's just too hurt. I think the arm just isn't what it was, because, you know, watching him in New England last year, that wasn't the Cam Newton that we saw for years, and they were going to the playoffs in Carolina. That player was really good. He wasn't perfect, but he was really good, and he was a lot better than he showed last year, don't you think?
Well, he was the MVP of the league good. So, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good.
He's pretty good. Over 40 touchdowns.
Yeah. Does he ever get it back? I don't know, man. I just don't know that he can throw with the shoulder the way it is. But, you know, you do the
back
right
up
PT,
in Seattle,
we'll see.
Would you rather have him than Geno?
I mean, he's obviously better. I don't know whether that's like a good long-term thing to have around here. I don't know whether you need your backup quarterback to have that much personality.
Yeah.
It might be a bit, like, personality tends to be there, but not that much. That seems like a lot.
This is Brock and Sox Blue 88. We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, Blue 88, to finish this one off, Brock, we'll start here. Question one. A lot of conversations about a few former Seahawks who have been out there in the news recently, whether or not reunions are appropriate. Is there one former Seahawk you'd be interested in bringing back?
Yeah, at the right number. You know who I think would be really fascinating? Golden Tate. I find that, and I've kind of heard some little rumblings about that, and he's more than likely going to be released. And he's bounced around a few different places, but as far as just a tough dude, maybe put him in the slot, or you got Tyler Lockett, or you got those two kind of intermixing between each other. He's been here. I think he loved it here. Obviously, there may be a little friction with the quarterback here, which I think would be fascinating as well. He would be one that, with a team that needs a third option. You need a viable third option. You saw that in the playoffs. I don't think you're going to find it in your four draft picks. I don't think I'm sold on the other guys on your roster right now. You get Golden Tate on a minimum deal or a very small deal with some escalators or some incentives. That would be a very intriguing name.
Dude, sign me up for that. You wouldn't have to ask me twice to bring back Golden Tate.
Sweeps. Remember what the Rams like to do. Think about Robert Woods.
You said you wanted some help. Cup. Here you go. I got you Golden Tate.
Yes. Yeah, think about a guy that's just in that Rams system. If you were to take Cooper Kupp or Robert Woods out and say, okay, give me a little clone around the league, a guy that's got experience, a guy that's a playmaker, a guy that's tough as hell. Yeah, kind of Golden Tate, you could see do a lot of those things that they ask of the receivers in this system.
Well, count me in. I like that idea better than Richard Sherman. I don't see how that could work. Question number two. Well, Russ hasn't spoken, as we mentioned earlier here, in about a podcast or so. So what will he say next, or what should he say next?
You know what I would love the next news of Russell Wilson to be? And I think a way to spin it in a super positive sense, because I don't know if he helped himself in his Q rating with some of the fans, at least the polls that I looked at and I performed on the situation. I don't think that a lot of the fans thought it was on brand or on character. I think the next best news would be Russell Wilson restructures his contract to free up $10 million in cap space. You take some of that money that you're due this year and you convert it to cash and you take a signing bonus and you don't take a penny less, but you move that money around to do whatever it takes. And the next announcement is actually Pete and John with a quote saying, man, what a great move. So thankful for our quarterback and for Russ to say it's absolutely the right move to address the O-line and other issues and maybe help with Jamal and Carlos and everybody else that we got to get in the fold. And if it meant me restructuring my deal and taking some money up front now and taking it in a lump sum, great. I'll do that now for the betterment of everybody. I think that'd be a huge positive next step.
All right, question number three. And we talked about offensive linemen and wondering who's out there, who's available. All right, fine. If you could make a change or shore up one of the five offensive line positions right now,
yep.
Which one would you be targeting?
I think the one that is going to be of most importance is right tackle. And he made a big move a year ago. And it wasn't a terrible move. And Shell played pretty darn good for you and your system and what you like to do. His injury inhibited him a bunch. He never got back to being the player that he was the first half of the season when that injury, the high ankle sprain, occurred. But as far as a fit for what you want to do, you have to have a very honest conversation with the new assistant O-line coach Dickerson, with Solari, with your whole staff. Is this guy capable of doing and reaching and getting and setting an edge the way that you need to in this system? Because, you know, that's you hire the coordinator and you hire the assistant O-line coach for a reason, because you want to implement some of that scheme, because you want to win on the edges, because you know off of that outside run comes jet sweeps and the screens and the counters and everything that you want to do with Russ and the rest of the supporting cast. I think you can live with Damian Lewis. I think left guard, you've got some bodies with some experience in your system. Could that be a draftable guy, possibly in the second or fourth round or whatever you're going to do in the draft? But that right tackle has got to be a priority. You've got to have a truly honest evaluation and between all the parties involved. Can this guy do what we're asking him to do? Or do we need to make a significant move with a pro that's done it in the past?
Yeah,
I think that's a priority.
So you're going to have to figure out what this scheme looks like, right? And what your new offense coordinator, new running game coordinator, like what is it they want out of the offensive lineman and who fits it?
So. And there's got to be more movement. I mean, Shell is a powerful man. He is a strong man. He was very much in the style that Pete loves to get you knocked off the ball and all of that. But that's not Ben, okay? And this isn't to say that, you know, you're going to run with Shane Waldron, the exact system that McVay ran and everything else. But he's cut his teeth there in multiple spots. You hired him for a reason. That is his background. You brought an assistant O-line coach with him from that system for a reason. And I think that movement on the edge will be hyper, hyper critical to get right.
There you go. All right. Well, quite a day today, Brock. I mean, sheesh. One of those weeks, man, where just, yes. You know, where it all goes down in the pit.
Yeah, and for late February, there was
too bad, because all I really wanted to talk about was the Genesis Invitational all day. I mean, that's all I wanted to do. Max Homa coming back for the win.
Yeah. So
he's hanging around and fading late again, but hanging around, more importantly.
Another top 15 for him.
Okay.
All right. Playing some better golf. I mean, you know, working his way back into this.
I believe the Masters right around the corner. Right?
I mean,
about 3 weeks away.
As much as you like, put him into a major, even when in the middle of all of his terrible play, didn't he finish second at the British a year or two ago? Like, he wasn't even playing well. He's like, geez, there's Spieth
around.
Managed to finish second. So we'll see. See what happens here in the next couple of weeks. We will be back next week, Brock. Well,
Howdy be back? Is Howdy coming back?
I don't know. Well, are we going to let him back? Should we let him back?
I don't know.
I don't see any reason to.
Well, I've had some mishaps with the podcast. I personally
Kyle wants
see
him
a
back.
Reason to.
Well, can't we hire a better replacement for him or something?
I mean, you think he'll have any opinion when he does come back on the Mariners?
Well, thank God he's not here this week.
Thank your lucky stars you didn't hear from him today.
All right, we got to run. We're done for the week. Enjoy yourselves, everybody. We will catch you guys next week with our next podcast episode. And until then, hey.
This is Barn.
See everybody. This is the chopper!